You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, Linda, unfortunately, and again, it looks like active shootings and mass murders are taking all the air out of the room.
Well, it is taking all the air out of the room, and it should for a while. But there's a lot more going on behind the scenes that I'm just really disturbed about with this, Ron. And, you know, one of the big things is the way that the politicians and the media are spinning these things. Again, we're right after the Second Amendment, as though this is the problem. They're talking about guns being the problem. The only person talking about mental health being the problem is President Trump. And that is the one common thread in most of these shootings.
Well, why do you think that they politicize these tragedies? I mean, I think that when you try to politicize something as tragic as this, it's just bad. It's just bad. It's no class.
Well, I think that they're obviously doing it for a couple of reasons. One is because there's an election coming up and they want to turn people's sentiments towards the Democrats who are, they're saying of themselves that they are the party of the people, and look at these horrible guns, and we need to have some control so that these things won't happen. And that's just patently false. There's nothing in history that proves that to be true. The other reason is because they really have nothing. They can't go after President Trump on the economy, so they want to find some reason to go after him. And therefore, to my disbelief, they are blaming President Trump for these shootings. Now, all three of these people had mental health issues. Would you agree?
Oh, without a doubt.
Okay. One of these people was, I think, probably a far right-wing person. One of these people was a very far left-wing person.
And an Antifa supporter.
Yes.
So he's way out there
so
on the extreme
left. So we've kind of just balanced that all out. And I'm not sure what the Gilroy...
I think it was anger.
He was just angry. It wasn't. There was nothing political going on there.
But, you know, when you take a look at it, and people that I listen to, even in the media, and people that even present themselves as being, you know, experts in this area, they really do lack a lot of expertise because these are clearly mental health issues. And one of the things that I heard one of the pundits say is that this is not a mental health issue. Anybody that plans an active shooting, buys a gun, buys ammunition, buys this, buys that, figures out a soft target, that person doesn't have a mental health problem. Well, let me tell you what, these people absolutely do have mental health problems, but they're not stupid. All right.
Exactly.
And that just shows you that they don't understand the mental health issues, the psychoses, the anger, the frustration, the social isolation, all of the different things that I see as a criminal profiler. And our behavioral scientists on our forensic death investigations team see. We all see the same thing. But these people in the media, these politicians, these pundits don't see it because they can't think it out.
And you know why else, Ron? Because they are not students of history. And one of the greatest mass murderers in all of history was Hitler, and he was brilliant. And these people...
But he was nuts.
He was nuts.
Right.
And I'm saying that you're absolutely right, that you can be brilliant in so many ways, but you can still be mentally ill. And, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of versions of mentally ill, and there are people that are what they call idiot savants who can't do anything socially, but they can play the piano or they can sing or they can do something absolutely that none of the rest of us could do. There's nobody dictates how our mind works, and you can't make these just blanket statements like these pundits do and
right.
Say what he said, that they're not mentally ill. They absolutely are mentally ill.
Well, you know, James Joyce, who was a very famous writer during the 40s, and he wrote a very famous World War II novel called The Thin Red Line. He said that there's a thin line between genius and insanity. And you have to look at some of these people as being extremely smart, so that they can premeditatedly plan using soft targets, meaning places where people don't carry guns, they're not allowed to carry guns, and there's a lot of people, and then obviously having a killing instrument. But the thing that bothers me about the politics and the media, when they talk about the issue of gun control, is they look at the gun as the thing that's at fault. The gun is merely an instrument of lethality. It is not the thing that pulls the trigger of the gun.
Or drives the car, or throws the knife, or any
exactly,
of those things.
Or sets off the bomb.
Right.
And as I've talked about and written about, and you've started to be writing about this quite a bit on America Out Loud recently, is that these people are ticking time bombs. I've been writing about ticking time bombs for years. And what happens when these politicians get involved in politicizing this and having this irresponsible rhetoric is that they are actually the people that start putting the components of the bomb together. Because these insane people, they watch television, they listen to talk radio, and they read, and they get angry by this. And so the people on the far right who are nuts are going to listen to all of this rhetoric, and we see that in the shooting in El Paso, where he came out with a manifesto, completely anti-illegal alien, type of thing, and he had read a couple of other documents that I had to look up and read, and of course they were white supremacist documents going all the way back to the 30s and 40s in the Adolf Hitler days, the Nazi regime, and this man was completely scared, and it's because of not just the rhetoric, but what the politicians do to create that fear. And in that particular case is open borders, unchecked immigration, MS-13 coming into the country, tons and tons of drugs killing tens of thousands of Americans coming into this country, and things like that. And it was interesting that he mentioned those things. That is a person who has a mental health problem who is scared about what's happening to this country.
Yes, and those are the same things that we mention when we talk.
And okay? We're not white supremacists.
But
we're concerned about America.
And we are concerned, but we are not mentally ill. And therefore, we don't have the same reaction to them. We have a more thoughtful reaction, a more subdued reaction, and we would try to make changes in legal ways or in common sense ways, but they don't have those coping mechanisms. And the other thing that we've talked about with these people, and as more and more news comes out, and more will still come out about these three active shooters just recently, is that every single one of them, now it's coming out, that, oh yes, I saw the signs. A girlfriend of the young man... The Dayton young man. He had told her that he had ideations of killing people.
On the first date.
Yes.
That they had. He had her watch a video of, I think it was, the shooting. And he said...
Well, it was a shooting of...
No, it was one of the active shootings.
Yeah, it was
I can't remember which one it was, but he showed her that video, and he said that basically what that person did resonated with him, and she never mentioned a word.
No, and it's tough, and I wish she had, but it's also tough because somebody has to really do something in order for the police to do something. And right now, one of the things that our gun laws and the way that we do our background checks, they're not going to probably find that little tidbit of information unless somebody makes a big deal about it. So that's probably unfortunate.
Well, there's a couple of things that are going on. I guess if anything can be positive out of this, it does, and I hate this term because every time somebody says, oh, we need a wake-up call, just how many wake-up calls do you need before you start thinking commonsensically about this, okay? It's a trite statement. Every time I hear it, it makes me mad. Stop waking up. Start doing something, Congress. OK, Okay, start doing something. And so what we have is, for instance, in Texas, we have Texas Republican Brian Babin, who has introduced legislation at the beginning of the year, I think around January 29th of this year, on H.R. 838. And what H.R. 38 is, it's called the Threat Assessment and Safety Act. And this is the one that they're starting to talk about that says, if there's red flags, you know, we need to call that attention to law enforcement. So have red flags. And so what are those things? Red flags to me are like Nicholas Cruz. And of course, you know, one of the cases I have is the Parkland shooting, where I'm representing as an expert a couple of the parents of students that were killed during that thing. And there were something like 32 calls for service that law enforcement had to go out and visit Nicholas Cruz. Yet nothing ever happened. Mental health professionals were involved with that guy three different times. He'd been suspended from school a couple of times, but he was always taken back. And everybody knew that that guy was an oddball, and law enforcement didn't do anything. And that's, by the way, part of the lawsuit. So we'll get into that case and you know, unpack that bag during the next year or so as we start getting discovery evidence. But along with red flags has to come due process, because you don't want to just have people that don't like you and all of a sudden they're calling law enforcement and they're saying, hey, you know, that Mr. Jones over there, who maybe it's a neighborhood disagreement or something, that guy's wacky, he makes me feel threatened, and I know that guy has guns, and I see that guy going to the range. Well, wait a minute. Is that a red flag, or is that some sort of disagreement between neighbors? And so law enforcement gets caught in the middle of that. But there has to be due process. The next thing that the politicians tend to do is they're always looking for an easy solution to these complex problems. And I think you alluded to that when we first started talking. So one of the things now is we need to get rid of all the assault rifles. Well, what is an assault rifle? And what it boils down to for the progressive left is anything that's a semi-automatic weapon all of a sudden becomes an assault rifle. So what do they want to do? They want to get rid of all these assault rifles. But let's just put it in context for a minute. Last year in the United States, 374 people in the entire United States were killed by rifles, of all different types of rifles. If you want to call them assault rifles or ARs or something, that's fine. Long guns, 22 semi-automatic rifles, I mean, you name it, 30-odd sixes, shotguns, whatever, 374 people. At the same time, five times more people in the United States were killed by edge weapons. Five times more than with rifles. So that just kind of puts it in context.
But the news media and the politicians will never put it in the proper context, because most people don't have that information that you just said. So therefore, they don't know anything but what they hear. And the politicians are experts at this. The media is expert at this. They feed you what they want you to react to. And therefore, by doing that, they manipulate how you think about something. And therefore, they can get the result out of you when you vote that they want to get. And it's just, it's a tragedy what's happened, because we've talked about it many times with the media, that the media has, you know, become really an agent of the left movement, and all of the different social media is the same. So people are not getting the facts that you're talking about here.
Well, you know, well, let's continue down this road, and I don't want to take a hit in any way, shape, or form, try to diminish these horrific active shooting mass murders, because this is one of the things I do for a living when I profile all these active shooters in the country. But contextually, albeit that is a very serious problem, let's compare and contrast two out of the three active shootings, which was the one in the Gilroy Festival in California, Gilroy Garlic Festival, and let's take a look at this recent active shooting in Dayton, Ohio, where we had a number of people shot and a total of 12 people murdered.
In those, okay? In both instances, in those, so nine, and I'm just, nine in one and
exactly.
Three in the other.
Right? And I'm going to leave El Paso out for just a minute, because I want to just contextually discuss something here. So we had 12 people killed, and then we had about 45, maybe a little bit less than that, people wounded. In Chicago, last weekend, we had 12 people killed and 47 people wounded. And I know you've got some statistics on Chicago.
Well, in Chicago alone, and we hear no outrage about this, Ron, we have had 279 people since the beginning of the year shot and killed. We have had 1,372 shot and wounded. We have had a total of 1,651 people shot in Chicago. Now, you might be somebody that says, well, you proved my point. Okay, take away their guns. Well, Chicago has a lot more issues than that. And there's lots of cities, and Texas is probably a perfect state that does not have this problem. Why? We have open carry here. We have people that are going to shoot back at you here. Also, the police are free to do their job here.
Well, they're not
free
in Chicago.
To do their job in Chicago.
Exactly. Let me put that in perspective as well, because you talked about 1,600 some odd people.
1,651.
That have been shot and wounded or killed. Mm-hmm. And let's compare and contrast that to officer-involved shootings, because look at how the progressive socialist left constantly picks on law enforcement, and you know, law enforcement officers are racist, and they excessive force,
and
they're violent, and they're killing everybody. That figure of 1,600 and whatever is 200 times more than the 8 people that have been shot, 3 of which were killed by Chicago PD officers this year alone.
5 killed, 3 wounded.
So out of the entire city, law enforcement officers in the city of Chicago only shot 8 people and only killed 3. And 200 times more were shot and killed by civilians in that same community. And we're not even talking about Baltimore. We're not even talking about Detroit. We're not even talking about Los Angeles, California, or, you know, these, or Washington, D.C. My God, the gun violence is atrocious in those cities. And guess what? All of the cities that I just mentioned have the most restrictive gun laws in the United States, bar none.
Right. And you don't see this kind of activity in the states and the cities that do not have those restrictive gun laws because, again, good citizens are the best way to stop these shooters. They are the people that are on the scene, and we see it happen all the time.
And we have to remember, again, that the big problem that we have in the United States is mental health. And who has done nothing to solve or curb or try to mitigate our nation's atrocious mental health problem? The United States government. Not only the United States government, but state by state, it's been horrible.
Yes.
Okay, we haven't had a mental health program since what, Lynn? About the late 1960s,
Late, it was a little later than that. It was, I want to say the late 70s, early 80s is when everything really fell apart in the mental health system. They started shutting down the hospitals. And what President Trump said, which was interesting, is that he is for having mandatory commitment for a time for people that need it. And I absolutely agree. There are some people that absolutely need to be evaluated and committed.
And you're 100% right. And all of our friends in law enforcement and all of our behavioral scientists understand that. And who is fighting that? The ACLU. So as long as you have attorneys like the American Civil Liberties Union stopping communities and governments from trying to take care of people that have mental health problems, we're not going anywhere. Just spinning our wheels.
And I want to get you another cup of coffee because I have a few more things to say here.
And I'm ready to listen.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com. Hey, well, thanks for the coffee.
Well, you're welcome. Need to get right into this. So President Trump, as a president should, went to Dayton, Ohio, and went to El Paso, Texas, to visit the grieving families, to talk to people. And as usual, he has been lambasted by the left. There are so many politicians and media people saying right out loud the words that this is his fault, that he caused this with his racist and white supremacist filled speech, and I couldn't disagree more. I don't see any of that from him. I don't see anything but concern for these people that were shot. I don't see anything but concern for the families. But I do see anger from him over the people blaming him for this, and I think that that's rightfully placed. And then when he goes to these places, you have people like Beto O'Rourke ginning up the people in El Paso. And by the way, Beto, you did nothing for El Paso when you were their congressman, so I don't know what you're thinking. And you're the guy that's been ginning up people about having completely open borders, tearing down any walls, letting anybody into this country, any drug dealer, any terrorist, any MS-13 member who will, all of the three of which will kill American citizens. And you are saying that President Trump is the one that is causing this problem? I mean, this just makes me beyond angry, and therefore he didn't get treated so well in El Paso by some people because they have to bring their politics in it. Can you not set that aside for a day or two in the memory of these people?
Well, you know, it's so sad because the president does what the president needs to do. The president is the father of our country. Okay, you know, we were talking about parents.
Well,
the president of the United States is the leader of the United States and the people of the United States, and that means all the people of the United States. And, you know, I remember after the prior shooting, President Trump was being interviewed, and they asked him, you know, what's the hardest thing that you have to do? And he says, well, two things. Like every president, I worry about sending people off to war. But he goes, the other thing that just really gets me down is these active shooters and these mass murderers. He goes, it really gets to me because we need to do something about it, and it is so difficult to bring people together and have a strategy on how to make it better, how to mitigate it, how to deal with the things such as our horrific mental health problem. You know, some of these things like this. And so here's a guy that to me is 100% genuine, simply trying to go and assuage the people in El Paso and, you know, the victims and the community, and the same thing in Dayton, Ohio. And for him to be set upon is just a classless act. And I want to say something, one more thing, Lynn, because I have a tremendous dislike for Beto O'Rourke because he's a total fraud.
He's a fraud.
Here is a white Irishman that claims a sort of a Hispanic name, which is his spin, because people are not well informed and they probably think he's a Mexican, but he's not. And like you said, and we are through El Paso all the time, Chief of Police is a friend of mine. I understand the tremendous challenges that they have, because right on the other side of El Paso, where our southern border is Juarez, Mexico, and that is a violent cesspool. So the people in El Paso have to deal with the violence, the sex trafficking, the drug trafficking, the cartel violence, you know, all of that, and now they get an active shooter in their community. And the poor president of the United States goes down there to try to make people feel better and try to bring some unity, to that particular community, and he's just set upon.
But Ron, what would happen to the people in El Paso if Beto got his way and those borders were opened and all those walls were taken down and that fence was taken down, and the people from Juarez, Mexico, one of the most violent places in the world, just poured over to El Paso? What do they think would happen to their community and their people and their children? So I don't understand the dislike that was shown to the president today in El Paso. And again, I have to think that it's people who are uninformed, ill-informed, low-informed, that don't know what the truth is about the situation. Although they live right across the border, they've got to know something.
You know, compare and contrast what's going on now in the United States and how President Trump is being blamed for these active shooter mass murder incidents, when the same thing was happening under Obama's watch, and then nobody ever blamed, from either party, okay, ever blamed President Obama for these shootings.
Well,
it was all guns.
Republicans don't tend to do that.
It was all about the guns. Now the paradigm has changed. And you know what that tells me, and I think it tells a lot of Americans that are like us, common sense conservatives, and maybe even moderates, even some libertarians, is that the Democrats are so desperate to have a democratic socialist president that they're willing to go to any length whatsoever to achieve that.
And we're going to talk about that, too, in a second. But I want to point out something that I am astounded at, that I bet that most people in this country don't know, that we have had over 200 mass shootings in this country this year in 2019.
But you got to define that, Linda.
I just was going to do that. So,
okay.
So a mass shooting would be defined as somebody that killed four or more people or shot four or
more
people.
There you go.
Now, of those, Ron, 140 are still unsolved. Why are they unsolved?
Because people are not informing the police as to who these shooters are. And they know who these shooters are.
And these are gang shootings, and gang members are not going to rat out the other guys. They're just going to go take care of it on their own.
Correct.
They're those types of situations. The other thing that really bothers me, and here I'm going to be, I understand, very politically incorrect, and I'm sorry about that, but this is just the facts, ma'am, and nothing but the facts, that if you look at the pictures of those people who have been arrested for mass shootings in 2019 in the United States, the vast majority of them are not white males. So if they are not white males, they are other different races. And so that when I hear on the radio and on the TV, everybody saying that this is white nationalism, white supremacy,
white terrorism,
that President Trump is, just making this happen with all of his hate speech, this is patently untrue. And you can go on and look at WikiLeaks if you'd like, and you can see all these people of every mass shooter in the United States in 2019, and take a look at what the real story is, because you're never going to hear it on the news. And that is, I think, what frustrates most of the people that I know and that I talk to, is that they don't get the real story. And we hear now about a tragedy here with 22 people in one place and 9 people in another place and 3 people in another place that were all killed. But there are far bigger problems nationwide going on that need to be resolved. And having open borders like Beto proposes, and like these people are saying that Trump doesn't want, so it causes these problems. That's not the cause. That is only going to increase the problems.
No, you're exactly right, and then it goes back again to the mental health profiles that you and I keep talking about, and the fact again, I'll bring it up. Don't mean to be redundant, but sometimes you just got to be, and that is these people have mental health problems, but they're not stupid. Okay, they watch television, they listen to this irresponsible rhetoric, and they get jacked up. And once that fuse is lit, there's nothing that you can do to stop that bomb from going off.
Well, and a lot of these are workplace violence, and a lot of them are gangs. So now you want MS-13 to be coming even more over the border and into your communities. Ask any community that has been invaded by MS-13 members how they feel about that and what's happening in their communities. They've taken cities and counties and places that were beautiful places to live and have destroyed them for the people that live there.
No, you're absolutely right. And the American people have got to start thinking about how this irresponsible media is complicit in forwarding these false narratives, these misrepresentations, these outright lies about some of the major problems facing the United States. You know, and the only reason that they're allowed to do this is because they are constitutionally protected by our Bill of Rights under the First Amendment. But, you know, it is just completely irresponsible. You know, later on, you know, I want to talk with you about the social media giants.
Well, I want to talk about that right now.
Oh, well, fantastic.
And I'll tell you why, and I'll just start off because Mitch McConnell, who's our Senate Majority Leader, has been receiving a lot of threats over social media, and he's been receiving a lot of threats via telephone. So he posted on social media some of those calls that he's been getting. So
the recordings, huh?
Could hear
oh,
them.
Interesting.
And Twitter shut him off.
Oh, wow.
Now, if that was the reverse, now, why did they not shut off Castro for posting all of the people that contributed to Trump? Why was he not shut off? Why was that allowed to happen?
Boy, look, can I talk about that? Because it all is part and parcel of this whole out of control, irresponsible, social...
Lopsided.
Yeah, social media giants. But I saw what he did, and I was actually watching Fox this morning, where Castro, and he's the twin brother of Julian Castro, and just to put it in perspective, Julian Castro, as you remember, was the HUD, or Health and Urban Development Secretary under Obama during that time, and Joaquin is his twin brother, and he's actually the congressional representative out of San Antonio, just down the road from us.
Terrible.
But what he did was he doxed, in other words, outed and published the names and businesses and addresses of some of President Trump's major supporters and donors in the San Antonio area.
Well, and I was hoping my name would be on that list.
Well, I'll tell you what, I tweeted right back.
I'm not that rich to be the major supporter.
Well, you know what I did? I got when I saw the tweet come out, and you know me, I hardly ever tweet anything, but I got on Twitter and got on his site, and I said, hey, you missed my name. You know, I don't have a problem being outed for something like that. I'm proud of it. I'm proud of doing anything that moves this country forward. But look how irresponsible that is. So what should happen if one of these ticking time bombs sees the name or the business of one of these donors and goes and does something like go into that business and shoot that place up? Now, I listened tonight on Fox, and a guy that owns, I guess, a barbecue restaurant was one of these people that got outed by Joaquin, and people were calling up and threatening the business and doing all of that, because there's a lot of people who are just as irresponsible as Joaquin Castro is. But that is, to me, a very, very dangerous thing. And Scalise, Scalise that got shot over a year ago in that baseball game by the way, a guy that was a Democratic,
Bernie Sanders
supporter, yeah. Mm-hmm. He said, this is dangerous. and we cannot let this happen. I have firsthand knowledge of how dangerous it is, and you certainly can't argue with that.
Well, you can't. And, you know, here's the interesting thing. So Mitch McConnell, leader of the Senate, gets blocked on Twitter for playing something that legitimately happened to him, people that willingly left messages to him. However, Castro's Twitter is still up, as are the Lexington Herald can put cartoon tombstones of their opponents on there for Mitch McConnell. Twitter will allow the words "Massacre Mitch" to trend nationally on their platform. Where do you think that these crazy people get these ideas when you see something like that? Yet when he puts something truthful on there that happened to him, he gets taken off.
Well, you know, it even gets worse. I mean, it's this one-upmanship of dangerous, irresponsible actions, because I just saw an article about a Hollywood movie that came out, and they're actually showing this in movie theaters, apparently, and it is a story of Trump supporters being hunted and like animals by liberal people, okay? Just hunting them and shooting them down and killing them like animals, and this is a movie that is premiered in Los Angeles.
I absolutely saw that.
Where does this end?
And how dare they make a movie showing people for sport going after deplorables?
Right.
Okay, that's what they call them, the deplorables. So, and we conservatives are the deplorables.
It's absolutely disgraceful.
So you know who Chanel Helm is? Chanel Helm is the Black Lives Matter leader in Louisville.
Okay.
And with people outside in public, she said, because you know Mitch McConnell fell down and he broke his shoulder, and she said he should have broken his raggedy, wrinkled, blankety-blank neck rather than fracturing his shoulder. Then you wonder why these people get so angry and act out the way that they do when they already have a couple of screws loose, and then you blame President Trump. He does not say anything like this. Yet these are all Democrats saying these things.
Well, you know, I wrote the Black Lives Matter book, and in the book, you know, I talk about that they are pretty much avowed Marxists. And by the way, it's interesting to note, you know, I've had that book out for a couple of years. It's been so damn popular. I'm so happy with it. But even the founding members of Black Lives Matter have never refuted anything in that book, because I directly quote them. And I quote the fact that they are admitted Marxists. So Black Lives Matter movement is simply one of these extreme movements that wants to basically do away with the democratic way of life, just like this new progressive socialist left is trying to do.
And what people need to know is that Twitter and Google and Facebook are all in the pocket of the left and of the Southern Poverty Law Center, and these people are out to make you think differently and change the election by what they allow you to see on social media. It's a big deal. It's in the courts right now. It's in the news right now. But I don't know if something's going to happen in time for the election. But people need to know that you're definitely being manipulated in what you see and hear, and who you can see and hear on social media.
And don't forget the man behind the curtain, okay? The person that's holding the marionettes, and that is George Soros, okay? And with Black Lives Matter, Soros donated $33 million to that one group alone through the Tides Foundation and Open Society Foundation and all these different things where, you know, he funds revolutionary movements. But let's talk about these media giants when we come back after having just one more cup of coffee.
Okay.
Tired of watching the same old sporting events? Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American Freestyle Bullfighting. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on Earth? This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. Go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
Hey, know what I'm having with my coffee? Look over here. I've got
watermelon.
Watermelon.
And coffee.
Well, it's hot outside. The watermelon is just ice cold, and it's so good to eat. Anyway, I think you wanted to talk about that movie.
Well, you know, the movie upsets me, and it should upset everybody. And I don't really care if you're left or right, liberal or not. This is a movie that Hollywood made, as we said, that is supposed to be billed as a satire, but it's not. And it's supposed to follow wealthy people that like action and thrill-seeking to a five-star resort where they go on a journey of hunting down and killing designated human beings. And those designated human beings are conservatives. They are deplorables. They are Hillary's deplorables.
What's the name of this movie?
It's called The Hunt. And it is, and I don't, and that's the first and only time I want to mention that name, because I think it's absolutely disgusting. And the film has about a dozen MAGA type, you know, Make America Great Again type people who wake up in a clearing and they realize that they're being stalked for sport by elite liberals. Ron, think about this. If conservatives had made this kind of a movie during Obama's administration, they would have been called every name in the book, racist, this, that. If they would have done...
Oh, they would never be in Hollywood again. They would be blacklisted in Hollywood. They would never be able to produce another film again.
I mean, but just the media, everybody would have been outraged that this was being done. Yet, you really don't hear much about this movie. And the fact that people have made a movie that glorifies killing conservatives like this, I just think it... And then the hypocrisy to complain about the guns with these mass murders, when what is in this movie is nothing but people with guns shooting innocent people who have a different political view than they do. And they think that this is some sort of a funny kind of a movie. This is just absolutely disgusting. And the fact that it's even out, and anybody who's in it and anybody who advertises in it or supports it, I will never watch or buy from again.
Well, it just shows you how low that some people will go and to get attention and to, again, politicize everything that's happening in this country. You know, they talk about, and it's of course, it's a false narrative, but President Trump not unifying the country. He's trying so hard to unify this country, but he has just astronomical challenges in front
like
of him.
This.
Like this.
I mean,
is a great example.
This doesn't help at all.
No,
how
no.
does this unify anybody?
You know, if you just look at the things that we were just talking about over coffee tonight, you know, you talk about Joaquin Castro doxing, you know, Trump supporters and Trump donors. By the way, you know, speaking of what happened, is that we found out that when he outed the Trump supporters, many of those people had also donated equally to his campaign. All right?
Oh, yeah, I saw
so,
that. Yeah.
So now what he's done is he's basically disenfranchised himself from people that would have donated money,
well,
you know, to
know,
his campaign. It
just,
here it's
would
just
be
crazy.
My question that I don't understand, and it's just me in the way that I think. If you're going to donate to President Trump, why would you donate to Castro? They're like polar opposites.
I think, you know, some people play both, because I think people
you're right.
Politically, they play both sides of the coin here.
Okay, well, I want to speak right now to the people in San Antonio and say, get a different congressman. And, you know, we're in that same area of Texas. We're not too far from there.
No, we're right up the road. And it's funny because...
Can't vote there, but I'm just saying, rethink who you're voting for, guys.
Well, you know, here's the deal. Like you said, we're right up the road from San Antonio. And until recently, I didn't even know who the guy was. So that's how much engaged he is with the San Antonio community. I've never even heard of this guy before, you know. And so, I mean, you take a look at, you know, some of the other representatives that we have around Texas, like Crenshaw and some of those people. They are out in the community all the time. They are engaged with the community. They're trying to do good things for the community. And this guy, Joaquin Castro, I mean, you never hear about this guy.
No, but for this movie, Ron, somebody, when this comes out at Universal, so I would also boycott Universal Studios, but when this movie comes out, somebody with mental health issues will try to do a copycat thing, and then who are you going to blame? Are you going to blame President Trump again?
Exactly.
I mean, they are promoting violence, and violence just because of what your politics are. This is the most despicable thing, and I just think that people should know and should do whatever they need to do that works for them to not support this type of a movie.
Well, let me switch it up.
Okay.
And I want to talk about what we have learned from Uber drivers.
Ah, the Uber drivers. And you know what? I'm somebody that loves Uber drivers. And it's a breath of fresh air over the taxis that we used to have to take in a lot of places. And I would say I don't recall that, at least not when we're together, and not when I've been alone, I've never had a bad experience. Have you?
I think I had one experience, but it really wasn't bad. It just wasn't up to par with all the rest of the good Uber experiences I've had. And, you know, I'm just like you. You know, you and I, in our different businesses, I mean, we travel all over the country, if not the world. And I got introduced to Uber by my administrative assistant. And she said, hey, Doc, you know, you're taking taxi cabs and doing this and doing these shuttles and everything. She goes, why don't you just Uber? So she helped me put the app on my phone because I'm not smart enough to do that. Okay.
Technologically.
Handle all these complicated dead body things, but I can't even put a stupid application on my phone. And I'll tell you what, from the time that I did it, and the first time I ever used it was in San Diego, California on a case, I have been so satisfied with the personal service that the Uber drivers bring. You know, the cars are always clean, they're well maintained, and you know, Linda, I know exactly what you like, and it's about the story. Okay, so when we're together, we're talking to them about their story, and I'm sure that when we're apart, you know, we're talking, you know, about...
I always ask them.
Yeah.
I always ask them everything, and they ask me everything too. And I just think that, well, talking to people around the world is just something that I've always done, you and I have always done. It's fascinating because life can be lived so many ways, and there's no, well, there are wrong ways to live life, certainly. Yeah. But I'm just saying that there's so many differences and varieties, and it's fascinating to me to find out how those people got where they are sitting there driving me at that moment.
Well,
I love it.
Well, so let's share a couple of stories, okay? So a week or so ago, we were in Orlando, Florida. You were getting, and we got to talk about this sometime in a future coffee. But, I mean, the wonderful award that you were given, I mean, in Orlando, I mean, just you're at the top of your industry, and I couldn't be more proud of you. But that's for another time. But the guy from Venezuela that picks us up at the Gaylord and in Orlando, which was a beautiful hotel, great venue to stay at, and he's driving us to the Orlando airport, and he's a Venezuelan attorney, and he's married to a pediatric doctor.
And they have a couple little kids, if
right.
I remember. And what was so interesting is, you know, he talks about Venezuela and their life there. She is a doctor. He is an attorney. I mean, they're at the top of their game in life, right?
We're at the top of their game.
And a socialist comes in and takes over that country and destroys the country, and they leave there with nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
And the cool story about it is the entrepreneurial spirit, and it is the human spirit.
It is.
Okay?
It is absolutely how we were created to be.
And you can't help but just so deeply respect these people. So they leave Venezuela, they come to Florida, and he is working, okay, and he was a very successful attorney in Venezuela, and now he's working so that his wife can go to take her medical boards and train. And what she's doing now, she got licensed as a midwife, okay, because she's a pediatric doctor. So, man, what a great person to have as a midwife, for God's sakes, okay? Talk about your neonatal care.
Right.
But so he's working day and night while she is, you know, studying, attending medical school part-time.
Taking
care of the kids, but also getting ready to get one license after the other, take her medical boards. And their deal is, once she gets her license to be a physician in the United States, then she's going to work and he's going to study
and
take the bar.
Right.
What a phenomenal story.
And it's a tragic, tragic story in some ways. And here's the way that it's tragic, that they did all of this already. How many people have done what they did in life, go that far in their career and get that educated and spend that money and that time to give yourself a career that's an amazing career, and to have it completely washed away by some socialist, communist-type government, and which I can't help but say, leave it to me, that that's what they're trying to do in this country. And then they have to flee with nothing and with their children. And they arrive here, and it took them some time, they said, to be able to get here.
Correct.
Legally.
Correct.
Okay?
And by the way, they did it legally.
Yes. And then to have to do all of that again. And his human spirit was so beautiful and so uplifting. I mean, you just couldn't help but admire them. I know that we gave them a nice tip because we just felt so sorry for them, yet so proud of them, you know?
Yeah.
Let me take one that we met in New York. Was a fascinating guy, and I always forget exactly where he was from because it was somewhere I couldn't pronounce, but it was somewhere near Romania.
Okay. Oh, Slovenia. Okay.
And it was way back up in this mountain range.
Correct.
Where there's really nothing there. And he made his way to different places in Europe, and he just would take a job here, job there, an odd job. And he made his way, got a visa, made his way to the United States. And by the way, he'd been to a number of countries by then. And he ended up in New York. And he gets an Uber license. And apparently it's very hard to do that there in New York, and much more stringent requirements. And he is driving the Uber there, and he was excellent, but he was so very interesting with his life experiences, and he was fairly young. I would say he was in his 30s.
Yep, he was.
And now he wants to go see some other states, and he'll do the same thing. But the Uber experience is letting him have that dream where he can go somewhere and work and live and see that place and, you know, kind of eventually find out where he wants to land in life.
No, you know, that's exactly right. And, you know, I was, last week I was in Houston, and I had a big trial in Houston, and I finished my testimony. And, of course, I'm at the courthouse in downtown Houston, and I come out, and I need to go to my hotel and go pick up my luggage. And so I hit the Uber button, and, well, I'll tell you what I really like about Uber. They're there in just a couple of minutes.
Right there.
You know, it's not like a taxi cab where you don't know when the heck they're going to show up if you don't see one. They connect you automatically with eight drivers. I mean, instantaneously. And it's whoever, you know, wants to, you know, take that fare and pick you up. So anyway, I have this guy pick me up, and he's a Vietnamese guy. And so he picks me up, and I said, hey, we first have to go to my hotel, and then from there, you know, we're gonna go to the airport. But I hadn't eaten all day, all right? And so now it's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm really, really hungry. And so we were driving back to the hotel, and from where I was, way up on the 14th floor, I was looking down on the blocks around me, and I saw this place called Bobby's Barbecue, okay? And you know me, I'm crazy for barbecue. And son of a gun, if we don't, I see it up the street, and I go, man, I'm hungry. And the guy goes, you know what? I'm hungry too. And I said, would you like to go eat? And so we had plenty of time, okay, because I didn't have 7 o'clock flights. I have like, you know, I've got like 4 hours to kill. And we go and we have a wonderful lunch together. And he's telling me about his story about coming here from Vietnam and about his dad that was a shrimper in Louisiana. And I mean, he had gone to the police academy in Texas and had graduated from the police academy, and he's waiting for an opportunity to become a police officer. But what he had been doing for the past year, he's up in North Dakota working the oil rigs up there. And, I mean, what a fascinating story.
Well, they're all so fascinating. There was one more that I remember was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, who was from Serbia. And he spoke English very well, which was kind of surprising because he hadn't been here that long, but he had made the effort to learn the language. And, you know, we kind of got into a talk with him about politics, of course, imagine that. And, you know, he loved President Trump. He thought he was a great president. And he knew more about our Constitution than I've seen any young person know for years. And you know, I was very impressed.
Well, you know, the one thing, because all, not all, but I would tell you probably about 70%, I don't know how it is for you, but about 70% of the people that are Uber drivers that picked me up, they're not Americans, right? I mean, they're all from all different countries, but they're all impoverished countries and countries that have had problems, like socialist countries, Russia, you know, the old Soviet Union and stuff. And to a single person, they are so happy to be in the United States. They are so happy to be working on their American citizenship or got their American citizenship, and to a person, they all came here legally, and they were so proud of the fact that they came here legally, and they went through the vetting process, and they, you know, they have their whole lives in front of them, and you just can't be excited enough for these new Americans that appreciate the United States of
yes,
America.
Yes, and the last thing I want to say before we go hit the hay, Ronnie, is our former bull trainer for our bucking bulls, Joe Black, the only female bucking bull trainer in the country. She's a little bitty thing from England. Today, she became a U.S. citizen.
Oh, my God, I did not know that.
And she is just as thrilled as she could be. We're actually going to see her in a few days. She's going to come and visit us and our bucking bulls.
In Tulsa, right, for some competition. Well, a big shout-out to our new American citizen.
Yes.
Joanne Black.
Yes.
And God bless you. And I'm
and
ready
well,
for a bet.
And welcome to be an American. Yes.
Absolutely.